Hour number two of the show, live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios. Luke Lipinski in for Vince Murata. The Bickley Murata Show joined, as we are every week, by the one and only Mark Schlereth. Mark, how are you doing today?
How are you guys doing?
We're doing great, Mark. We appreciate it, man. Called you the greatest guest in radio before you came on, and I mean that, man. I'm not just messing around.
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
All right.
Well, my standards are a little bit low, but you know, hey, you give us a lot to work with. No, I'm just kidding.
As are mine.
Yeah, right. Exactly. All right. Let's talk about the Buccaneers Cardinals game. The end of it, kind of got Cardinal fans a little bit ticked off here because it wasn't so much the fact that they assigned a pass interference flag and a penalty to a play that there was no flag on that helped Tampa, the not even reviewing the last play of the game. You add them up together, and Cardinal fans kind of felt like they got jobbed there. What did you think of that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I tell you what. First off, they haven't made a move on any of these pass interferences all year. There's been a handful of them that have even been reviewed or been turned over or anything like that. So, yeah, that one, that was quirky. You know, I always look at it, though. I always look at these things at the end of games or these things that go on from an officiating standpoint. At what point do you start to realize that, hey, man, it's an imperfect system. What we've asked these officials to do is probably impossible. And so I get to the point where you're just like, I'm not going to let it ever come down to officiating mistakes. Like, I'm never going to use that as an excuse. I'm never going to look at it that way. I never have as a player. I haven't as an analyst. I think there's so many mistakes you made. I mean, what if in the first quarter you throw a touchdown in the red zone to a wide open receiver? What happens at the end of the game with a minute and change left where you throw a pick at the end of the game? Like, those things to me are in your control. You'll never have the officiating of this game in your control. It never will be. And like I said, I don't put it all on the officials. I put a lot of that on the league. And so the inconsistency, I mean, the only thing that's consistent about officiating in this league is the inconsistency of the officiating. So I just always look at it like I'm never going to play that game.
Mark, if you look at David Johnson, he finished that game on Sunday with 6 touches for 10 total yards in a big fumble. And Cliff Kingsbury basically said afterwards he was benched at that point. I'm sure you've been asked about him a lot, but it seems like he's trending in the wrong direction still. What do you see from David Johnson?
You guys, last year, he looks like a shell of his former self. And I talked to you about it this year. I mean, I can walk you through blitz pickup situations. I can walk you through a bunch of different things of his game where, you know, wrong reads or bad reads in the running game. I can walk you through blitz pickup situations. You can put on just about any game. But the games that I have covered where I've really, you know, dug deep into the coaches' films where he is not an active participant, where he just doesn't want to do it.
Yeah.
So I'm surprised it took this long. Maybe it's just because you haven't had a viable option behind him. But, yeah, there's a lot of things that you look at and just say, hey, man, it's just not, you know, it's not personal. I got to be careful because, you know, sometimes I get emotional and then, you know, my former teammates call me and yell at me.
That's why we love you, man.
Yeah, but, for me, I look at David Johnson and say, hey, whatever the case may be, whether it's the injuries, whether it's, you know, whatever it is, you haven't been the same guy. And there have been opportunities to do some of the dirty work that, to me, it looks like you've turned down. And and that, to me, is the most disappointing thing. Like, you know, as a football player, we're all asked to play the game. And there are things that you have to do to support your teammates, to support your football team. And if you're unwilling to do those things, well, that's just nothing more than selfishness or just a lack of desire or whatever the case may be. And those things aren't fun, you know. I mean, it's not fun. But, you know, I'm watching right now, I'm calling the Carolina game, I'm watching one of the best backs in the National Football League right now, Christian McCaffrey. You want to talk about a guy who will stick his nose in there and pick up a blitz, a guy that has worked, I mean, tirelessly on doing that, a guy who has studied other guys, he studied Darren Sproles being a smaller guy and how you create leverage and how you do that and how you, like, he wants to be great. And to be great, you have to be all around, and you have to do the dirty work. And frankly, the last 2 years I've been calling games, and I've called a bunch of Arizona games. That's a guy that doesn't want to do the dirty work.
You're right on the money about all of that, and it seems like no matter what game I watch, whether it's Dalvin Cook in Minnesota, even Ronald Jones for Tampa, they're running with their hair on fire. They're accepting and inviting all contact and dishing back what they can, and it's passionate, engaging, compelling stuff. I'm curious in a guy like David Johnson. How do these stories play? And you touched a little bit on this. But if you could elaborate on how these stories play out inside a locker room when you get a guy who got paid who suddenly maybe doesn't want, lost his taste for it all. I know what happened to Jared Valdir in training camp. He got up one day and said, I'm done. He went home. He got reminded that you got $6 million of guaranteed money coming your way, and he came back. He was never the same and never treated the same. What's going on inside that Cardinal locker room if there are guys who are wondering, dude, really, you're shutting it down after you got paid and not even giving us that kind of full effort?
I think that guys understand, like, that you can become somewhat of a pariah if that's the perception. If the perception is he's trying hard, but he's just been beat up and he's been injured and he's just not the same guy, then I think there's a lot more leeway or a lot more quote unquote forgiveness.
Right.
But if the thought process or the feel, and I have no idea, I'm not in that locker room, but if the thought process is really, dude, like really, like we're fighting here,
yeah.
Especially like as an offensive lineman, like when you have to hit people on every play, and like you think about that position. I mean, come on. The only time we ever like A.Q. Shipley, the only time we'll ever talk about A.Q. Shipley is when he's out in the open field looking like a runaway beer truck, right? That's the only time. And we're going to say something about his, you know, his presence. He's a really good football player. Guy's a really good football player. So there's two things. We'll make fun of, you know, him out there stumbling around trying to block somebody on a screen, right? Because that's what happens to most offensive linemen, unless you're Jason Kelce, who is a freak show.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you get a holding call. And other than that, you don't really get talked about. But every play you got to hit somebody. Every play you got to go out and you've got to do your job. And if you don't do your job, right, there's no – like when you do your job perfectly, nobody notices.
Yeah.
When you as a group don't do your job, everybody notices. Like, there's no other position. Like, you can run a crappy route if you're a wide receiver. And you know what? 9 times out of 10, nobody's going to notice that it was a crappy route. The ball's not coming to you. You're not open. And nobody cares. But take one crappy set and give up an edge rush and get your quarterback killed. Everybody sees it. Right? And
yeah.
So, like, when you think about it in those terms, like, look at what the other dudes are sacrificing for you to have some success. And when you start looking at football in totality, in those terms, like, it is disrespectful to the game and to the guys that you play with if you're not willing to give full effort on a blitz pickup.
Yep.
Like, that to me makes my stomach turn.
Yeah. That's very well said. All right, let me ask you about this, because here's the last thing, the last option with David Johnson. B.A. used him to a nub in 2016, the really good year. He had 373 touches, had another 300 last year. And there's this theory in the NFL, running backs who get 300 more carries, especially as they get a bit older, either they wear that for a couple of years and then maybe spark again, or they're never the same again physically. Have you seen that? Maybe that applied to Terrell Davis at some point in time. What do you know? What can you say about that phenomenon? One season of extreme use and what it might mean in the course of a running back's career.
Well, I mean, it is such a word. I always tell a story. I picked up a fumble once. And I created a fumble because I gave up the sack, right? But the ball bounced right into my hand. And so, you know, and this is when I was a rookie, so I could run. Like, I could move, right?
Yeah.
And I thought to myself at the time, I was like Chariots of Fire. You know, I had the music playing in my head. Popped the ball straight out of the air. And I thought, I'm going to score. Like, I literally thought I was going to score.
Uh-huh.
And then Mike Merriweather, I swear to God, he came off the sideline, hit me in the jaw, about broke my jaw. The only reason I didn't fumble, because I did fumble, but like 4 DBs hit me at the same time and pinned the ball to my chest. And I'll never forget this. I'm laying at the bottom of this pile, snot hanging off my nose, right? I'm slobbering. And I'm thinking to myself, note to self, don't ever pick up the ball again, ever. Like, that thing attracts a lot of attention. So think about every time you carry the ball, you know, there are 11 guys on defense trying to decapitate you. You take shots. You take hits. You take, like, all that stuff. The cumulative effect of that is, I mean, it's really hard on a body. And I will say this, and, you know, to take a little bit of pressure off David Johnson, there comes a time, and everybody's a little bit different, right? Every guy is wired a little bit differently. But there comes a time in everybody's career where your body just says, up yours. I ain't doing it anymore. And I swear to you, mm-hmm. I have played games where I was on crutches on Saturday and played lights out on Sunday. I checked myself out of a hospital on a Monday morning, drove to pregame after having surgery, drove to pregame and started on a Monday night, and we beat the Raiders 27-0. Wow. I mean, I have done these things, and I could always will my body to do these things, and I could always mind over matter. Like, it doesn't matter how bad I hurt, I can go out, I can not only play, but I can play well hurt. And there came a time in my career at the end of it where my body just said, nuh-uh, I ain't doing it anymore. And no matter how much I tried to will it, no matter how much I tried to use mind over matter, my body just said, up yours, I'm not doing this anymore. And at that point, I was like, you know what, it's time. Like, it is time. This is the first time in my career where I felt like, personally, I was a hindrance to my football team.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that I can't live with that. That I can't be the reason we're losing games or we can't block people, right? Yeah. So, but there comes a time, and every guy is different. You know, every guy has a little bit, like, to play in the National Football League, you got to be tough and you got to be a little bit crazy. But there are some who are a little bit more crazy and a little bit tougher than you. And so, you know, every guy is a little bit different when it comes to that.
Talking to Mark Schlereth. Mark, you look around the NFL, there are four teams that already have 8 wins. 2 of them are in the NFC West. The Rams are not bad, but they're in third. I mean, just looking at what the Cardinals are eventually going to have to navigate here, I know things change from year to year quickly in the NFL, but, I mean, is this going to be one of the 2 or 3 toughest divisions for a while in your mind?
Well, yeah, I think there's a couple of things. One, I think when you look at what Seattle does, you look at what the 49ers do, there's a couple of things that they adhere to that is really interesting. You know, this league is so cyclical. And look at the teams that are really playing well. The teams that are really playing well right now absolutely control line of scrimmage. They are beasts up front. Look at what the 49ers have on the defensive side, what Seattle has on the defensive side, the way they run the football. Like, this has gone back to late 90s football, right, where you've got a fullback. You know, a couple of weeks ago I'm doing a game, and I come across this stat. The teams that had, the best records in the league, all those teams with the best records in the league had the majority of snaps that they ran out of what we used to call base personnel or 21 personnel, two-back personnel. And at the time it was the Patriots at 7-0 or 8-0, the Niners at 7-0. It was the Minnesota Vikings at 5-2. It was the Green Bay Packers. I mean, it was like, wow. Look how this trend has gone. It was the Raiders, like what the Raiders have done. But it was the top, like out of the top 10, like 7 of them had more two-back formations than anybody else in football. And so it's kind of come back to, as much spread as we like to pretend that, hey, it's all about spreading people out, it's all about throwing the football, it really is about condensing formations. It's really about how you operate, how you operate from the standpoint of how many different times can we run the same play but out of a different formation, without of a different look, so that we can get really good at running that particular play. Or how many times can we run the exact same play? Or how many times can we run a play that looks the same but has a different concept out of it? So I think you have to be able to do both. And I think the teams that really understand how to run the ball and can dictate in the red zone running the football are teams that eventually just win a lot of football games, especially as the weather turns and it gets nasty. And in your particular division, you've got 2 of those teams. Actually, you've got 3. It's just that the Rams have kind of forgotten their way, right? That what they were. They were a spread 11 personnel football team that crammed it down your throat in the run game. So they've gotten away from who they really are, and that's been kind of one of their biggest downfalls.
That's a great point, because if you look at the Rams, because it's easy to say the Rams and the Chiefs are the two teams, and they locked up in that great game last year that was supposed to be the future of football, and everything they like to do and spread the field and throw the ball. Rams can't run it anymore, and they just look very, very average. On the flip side, what do you make of what Baltimore is doing right now? Are they just rolling hot right now, or is this team that legit with this approach that they have with their quarterback and running the ball?
Well, they are that legit. And so I've had a chance to do several Baltimore games, one this year, a couple last year. And it's phenomenal. Like, talking to John Harbaugh wouldn't last on the open market. Remember, people were talking about firing John Harbaugh last year?
Yeah.
He wouldn't last for 2 seconds on the open market. One, like, he gave permission to the organization to draft Lamar Jackson when a lot of teams were like, he needs to play wide receiver, he needs to do this. And then he looked at his staff, he changed his offensive coordinator, went to Greg Roman, and he said, let's create something that is unique to only us. And we're going to be willing to do this. And you know what? We'll put the quarterback in harm's way, but he is so athletically gifted that we'll look at it like, is he going to really take more shots than a drop-back quarterback takes? Like, is he really going to take more shots? And so they went through this whole plan, this whole scenario. And interestingly enough, as I talked to John about it, he's like, listen, there hasn't been a new passing concept in the National Football League in 15 years. You know, everybody runs a Z drive with a basic over the top of it, right? Everybody runs a flat combination. Everybody runs a flat curl combination. You get 3-by-1, you know what you're getting out of 3-by-1. You're getting somebody running off coverage, somebody running a flat, and somebody running a corner route. Like, it's not that complicated, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, so what we decided to do is to take the running game that's completely unique to us and basically say, we'll create concepts that nobody knows how to defend in a league in which you're not allowed to play in pads anymore in practice. How do you get prepared when you're facing one of one and it's completely unique and it's super physical and you don't ever get a chance to practice how to defend it?
Wow.
Like, I mean, it is so unique, and they do such a good job. If you split the field in half, you start with, you know, a 5-on-5 combination on one side of the football field. And by the time you snap the ball, you got 7-on-5 and the quarterback is running the ball. I mean, it's, I call it heavy spread is what I call that offense. And I'm telling you what, it's like, I'm watching film. I'm like, man, that's it. Oh, that was a great run. Then I'm, oh my God, that was an unbelievable. That's the best run I've ever seen. And I'm like, wait, that one's better than the last one that I just watched.
Right. Right.
It's absolutely ridiculous. It really is.
All right, here's the last thing for you before we let you go. We appreciate your time, as always. You were an excellent, excellent offensive lineman. I'm watching Jadeveon Clowney in the game he had against San Francisco, and I'm wondering, have you ever had a game as good as you were where you just ran up against a guy that just, I can't block this man? Do you ever have a game like that? What does that feel like?
It does not feel good. And yes, I have. I've had that game. I think everybody goes through it. Where you have a dude that just absolutely gives you fits. And it is one of the worst feelings in the world. The one thing you can do as an offensive lineman is you can try to turn it into a street fight, you know, and you're not going to grade out well, but you probably won't cost your team the game. But yeah, I've had those games, where I was just absolute garbage and couldn't block the guy. And you know what? You just try to survive them. And then you hope the film gets destroyed, right?
You try to survive it,
and then you hope that nobody ever sees that film ever. It's a hard thing. It's a frustrating thing. And, you know, as an offensive lineman, man, it's just depressing. Just absolutely depressing, because you just feel like, you know, you've let your guys down. Yeah. So it's a really hard thing to have to go through. But I will say this, you know, both those offensive tackles, both Staley and McGlinchey, were out for 4 or 5 weeks or 6 weeks. So it's really hard to come back and get right in. I mean, practice is practice. games are different, and it's really hard to get right back in and find the rhythm of a football game. And so it's a hard thing to do, not making excuses for those guys. It's a hard game, man. It really is. And you know, they weren't put in great positions to succeed, that's for sure.
Mark Schlereth, great stuff. Always enjoy talking to you. Thanks for the time, man.
Thank you, brother.